It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 352, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. The football team is back on the Smurf Turf, and Matt and I preview the bowl matchup against Western Michigan. We also talk women's volleyball, men's basketball, and preview a bunch of other bowl games. If you want to join our halftime show, go to facebook.com/riseandshout at halftime and see our live streaming show as Matt and I talk about the first half of the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. Thank you for downloading and listening. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com and listen to Matt and I right now. So, Matt, we've talked a lot about TV shows lately, and we've walked away from movies, Matt. And Justin Sweeney wants us to talk movies.
Sweeney!
And so this is Justin's response, and he got to us on Twitter, at Justin D. Sweeney. He tweeted us, at BYU_RiseShout, if you want to climb on in the tweet bag. He says, movies coming out this month, your movie, he said, sorry, I can't read today, coming out this month you are most excited to see, I think mine is RGB1. I don't know what that is.
I'm drawing a blank.
Lots to choose from this holiday season. What's RGB1?
Is it Ruth Bader Ginsburg? No, that's not right.
Movies coming out in December. Let's look this up on the interwebs.
Is it RBG?
I don't know.
There is a Ruth Bader Ginsburg movie coming out. That's why
I think that's what he's excited about. He's a lawyer. Right?
That's where I went. That's where I went.
Okay, so here are some movies coming out. You tell me if you're excited to see them.
Is RBG1 on the list?
I don't know. We'll get to that here in a second.
All right, put it on the list.
Mary Poppins Returns.
Excited, actually.
I'm also excited, strangely enough.
I may go see that close to opening day.
You've seen A Quiet Place, right?
No.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Have you seen what's that one with Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt?
Groundhog's Day, but with aliens. They're on a planet.
It's called Earth, but yes.
Yeah, but they're from, I've seen the movie.
Aliens.
I've seen the movie.
There's
I've
aliens.
Seen the movie.
Attacking. Okay. She's great. Emily Blunt's great. Mary Queen of Scots. No, I won't see that one.
Meh.
So what about, have you seen Vice or will you see Vice? I probably won't see Vice.
I will see Vice.
I might see Vice. It looks very good. I won't see it in the theater. Alita Battle Angel.
I'm lukewarm on Alita Battle Angel.
No, it's one. I feel like that's one I'll watch on a plane. Aquaman. I'm actually totally jazzed about Aquaman.
Yeah, I could watch it on a plane.
I'm totally jazzed about Aquaman.
I was okay. I was excited about Aquaman until a preview I saw today.
It's good. It's getting good reviews, man. It's getting good reviews. I don't know. Which DC movies almost never get good reviews. What about Bumblebee, the Transformer movie they should have made? Originally. Oh, I'm totally excited about that. I think my girls
would be excited about it. I feel like I'm just, maybe I'm too tainted by the other Transformer movies.
You are.
I need to let that go.
You need to let it go. What about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which has technically already come out? Oh my gosh, I want to see that.
Very much want to see that. My son went and saw it without me. I'm still a little hurt.
But wow, that was kind of a betrayal, really.
He went with some friends Saturday night.
What about Mortal Engines?
Mortal Engines looks good.
I'm excited about Mortal Engines. We already mentioned Vice. On the Basis of Sex, is that the ones he's talking about? The Ruth Bader Ginsburg? Is that the one he's talking about?
No. There's a movie called RBG that is Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
But it already came out last month, didn't it?
I don't know when it came out. I haven't seen it, but it was like a documentary.
On
the Basis of Sex is probably what he's talking about, huh?
Well, that's the story of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right? I know there's a documentary about her too. But this one's the story. What about Stan and Ollie? Have you seen that one? It's the
Laurel
and Hardy. But it's got John C. Reilly in it.
No, I haven't seen this.
Looks interesting. I probably won't see it in the theater, though. So And then I saw Creed 2 last week. Oh my gosh, it's amazing.
I probably need to see Creed 1, huh?
Oh, you need to see Creed. You know what Creed 2 is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Drago. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. I know some people are like, oh, it wasn't good as the first one. Shut up. All you people out there that also say Rocky IV is a bad movie, you can also shut up. All of you. It's a great movie. Wow. It's ended the Cold War.
Strong feelings.
It ended the Cold War. Matt, before... Well,
I've got some on here on the list that I'm surprised you haven't mentioned.
Okay, what haven't I mentioned?
Avengers Endgame.
That's not in December.
Oh, I was thinking 2019. Sorry. My bad.
Coming out this month, you were most excited.
My bad.
Read the question.
Whatever. You read the question.
I did read the question.
Big jerk.
You're a jerk. All right. Let's go on to the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. The women's volleyball team their season ended in the semifinals here in Minneapolis to Stanford in straight sets and not particularly competitive. But Matt, I'll say this, a tremendous year. They got beat by a really, really good team in the semis after a tremendous run. Hats off to the Cougars on what is, you know, one of the best seasons a BYU sports team has ever had.
Yeah, great season, great team. You know, everything to be proud of there.
Yeah. And then Stanford went on to win the championship in a 5-set thriller in the final match. Friend of the podcast, Brandon Gurney, points out in an article in the Deseret News that this team, while they are losing a couple of their best players, are still young and deep. And, you know, obviously the All-Americans, Ronnie Jones, Perry, and Lindy Haddock-Epic will be hard to replace. But there's a bunch of young players, and he thinks that they have a chance to make a deep run in, if not next year, in the next couple of years. So future stays bright for BYU women's volleyball.
Yeah, I mean, you've got some young players who got some really good experience this year. There's reason to be excited going forward.
Yeah.
You know, you got the coach of the year, you know, with a cupboard that is not bare.
Yes.
So, yeah. There's good things ahead.
They'll continue to be very good. And Matt, Taysom Hill's become like a phenomenon as we move on from volleyball. I mean, I was talking with a friend of mine who's a big NFL fan, not a BYU fan, and not a Saints fan. And I don't think he knew that Taysom Hill played at BYU, or he hadn't thought of it because he knows I'm a BYU fan. And he said to me, have you been following this Taysom Hill story? It's like the best story in the NFL this year. And this was not this week. This was last week after the blocked punt. And he was just like amazed that a quarterback could move like that. Right? Like, you know, and his joke to me, he knows I'm a Patriots fan, is can you imagine Tom Brady trying to block a kick on special teams? Right?
Oh.
And that
would be embarrassing.
It was a little bit of a dig.
That'd be awesome.
It was a little bit of a dig, but I think Tom Brady was.
But it's just fact, right? Tom Brady's maybe the greatest of all time, but I don't see him blocking a punt.
Yeah, he's probably not blocking a punt. But, I mean, Matt, this Taysom Hill story is kind of. You know, people are really gravitating towards this quarterback, backup quarterback who will do anything the team asks him to do and is returning kicks on a team that has that Kamara guy that's pretty good at returning kicks, right? And
yeah, he's a thing.
He's a thing. I just look at this and I think to myself, you know, this is what we all believed Taysom Hill was capable of when he was at BYU, that he could do anything. Now, it's easy to say that. It's another thing for somebody to go out and actually prove that they're that good of an athlete.
And to do that at the NFL level is pretty crazy. Right? I mean, this is like the best of the best. And he's out there basically like, put me in, coach, wherever you've got a gap. I'm Superman.
Yeah, special teams, offense, I'm waiting for him to line up at linebacker, you know, because of course you read the same story I did where the special teams coach for the Saints thought people were joking when they said he was a backup quarterback, thought he must be a linebacker, right? Based on his size, you know, and, of course, like we said last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, no, BYU should not have had him returning kicks, right, and blocking punts on special teams. But it is an interesting thing that often the best players on your team aren't getting put, like they would say in high school, right? They aren't getting put in multiple positions because, well, you got to specialize and you're worried about injury. And those are legitimate concerns, right? I'm not actually downplaying those at all, but I just think in my head, what else could Taysom Hill have done while he was at BYU? What other really cool things would have went down had he gotten put in other positions, right?
Can you imagine him on defense? Could he have been like the transcendent type of player that could take over a game from the defensive side of the ball?
He's Brian Urlacher, is what he is. I mean,
it would be insane.
I think he's Brian Urlacher. I seriously do. I think you put him on a Bronco coached team, and he would have put him in positions like that. I mean, no disrespect to Kyle Van Noy when I say this here in a second, but Kyle Van Noy doesn't have the same level of athleticism that Taysom Hill has, right? And he was one of the best linebackers we ever had. Now, assuming Taysom Hill could figure it out, the defensive side, which I see no reason why he couldn't. I mean, I think he could have been an amazing linebacker and or safety, depending on your defensive alignment, right? Mm-hmm. Can you imagine him like a heat-seeking missiles type of safety?
Oh, my goodness.
Like bring him on blitzes, you know, have him spy you maybe the most athletic running back or athletic quarterback, right? I mean, imagine him spying a quarterback. This quarterback's not getting the edge.
That quarterback's going nowhere.
That's what I mean. Like you'd be done, right? And that's Urlacher at his prime could do things like that too at the NFL level, right? Before he started slowing down. Anyway, it's a great story. It's a great story. Well, Matt, before we get to basketball, I wanted to remind everybody my first novels in both of my series are still on sale. Call it a Christmas sale, a holiday sale.
Merry Christmas to you.
99 cents. You can get Peak Crosser, which is the first book in my Empire of the Peaks epic fantasy series, or you can get Caliban's World, which is the first book in my science fiction series. There are two more Empire of the Peaks books, two more Sycorax series books. So if you buy those and like them, there's more books. And I'm writing for Empire of the Peaks, book 4 and book 5, which will conclude the series, are in process and will be published next year. So I have a 5-book series. But go check them out if you're interested. Matt, basketball. I spent a lot of time watching basketball on Saturday.
There was a lot of basketball to be watched.
And I watched BYU and against the UNLV Running Rebels, and at halftime, I almost turned it off.
Yeah.
Crap kicked out of us.
What was that? I mean, what is that?
Well, it was a weird game because they started off really good and then just couldn't make a hoop and couldn't stop anybody for a while and then went down by a big amount. But then in the second half, come roaring back, really cool second half, looked really good, had control of the game at the end, and then end up going overtime and get beat on. Basically, they played really good defense in overtime on that last shot. The guy hit, you know, a deep three-pointer with the guy in his face, right? It's not a whole lot you can do. But let's get to that here from a Facebook question from Spencer Thurman. And if you want to join the conversation on Facebook, that's facebook.com/writeandshout. Spencer says, what in the world was BYU thinking during that last minute of regulation against UNLV? All we had to do was drive to the basket, get fouled, and make one of two to take the lead. Instead, we pass around the perimeter and miss a three-point attempt, a fading to the side Zach Selyus three-point attempt, I might add, and lose an OT. Is the football team tutoring the men's basketball team on how to lose winnable games? Hashtag yikes. Ridiculous. Hashtag facebag. Matt, I'll say this. That last play made no sense to me, and I don't know if they just didn't. Haas was out there on the edge, and then, you know, Yoli was out there on the edge, and they didn't really do anything, and then there was a drive, and then a kick to Selyus, and then he was kind of moving away from the hoop as he shot, which is typically not recommended. And then, especially at that distance, and then we go to overtime. It's hard for me to know if that was a coaching mistake, like they just called a bad play, or did the play just not get executed the right way. But regardless, when you have a chance to win it in regulation, you probably don't want to fade away Zach Selye's three-pointer to do it.
I don't know. I think that's exactly how they drew it up. I think that's exactly what Rose and company drew up. Yeah, that's exactly. They've been practicing that. It just didn't go our way.
Just distract them with TJ Haas and Yoeli Childs and hope they don't cover Selye's on the three-pointer.
It's like you think he fakes it. No, he thinks about faking it.
Yeah. Yeah. Then in overtime, we get bailed out on a play that was very similar, where it didn't seem they could decide. Haas and Childs couldn't decide if they were going to screen or not or what. And Hartnett went and got the ball and then drove and made a really tough layup. And sometimes I think people forget how good he is going to his left, as a lefty. But he made a really good shot at the end, but also not the shot you probably wanted. But at least that one, and the announcers pointed this out, at least that one was going to the hoop, right? And this was a game where the umps called I think they might have been baseball umps because they struggled with the rules of basketball, including on the tip-off in overtime when there was an over and back. Like, they were totally on one side of the they had got possession on the forward side of the basketball court and passed it backwards. And it's like the ref's like, huh, I don't know what that means. Anyway,
that's cool, apparently.
They called a lot of fouls, and so, you know, the announcers were talking about this a lot. But let me ask you this. One of the announcers, he kept saying they need to pump the ball into Childs, and he should touch it on every possession. I hear announcers say that a lot. I think it's crap. There's no way you want him touching it on every single possession, right?
But you can say that as an announcer because nobody's ever going to actually do that and prove you wrong, right?
Right.
Like, it's a perfect thing to say, like...
But sometimes they were doubling him in the post, right? Which you do not want to throw it in to the guy that's, you know, and again, yes, you could run some screens or whatever, and the slip screen was okay. But quite frankly, we only have one guy I feel really good about doing the screen and roll with him, which is Haas. I don't feel good about anybody else running that play because I don't think we've got good enough passers. I don't think Hartner's a good enough passer. Maybe Emery. I certainly don't want any of the other guys doing it. So I hear what the announcer's saying. Child's our best player. I want him touching the ball often. But this team cannot – I mean, he can't take 40 shots a game, right? Like,
he
other
can't
people
literally
have to
carry
make...
every possession on his shoulders.
No.
You're not going to win basketball games.
As good as he is.
You're not going to win basketball games doing what we saw the other night, but you're definitely not going to win basketball games trying to do
that. Well, I mean, they could win basketball games if we're talking about the second half of what they did, right? Like – they played a really good second half after playing a really poor first half. The other thing I noticed in that game is the offense is way better when Emery's in, because now you've got three guys in Childs, Haas, and Emery who can all create their own shot.
Which is interesting, right? Because we kind of talked about this was last week or the week before about whether, you know, is Emery going to be the difference? Is he going to be the spark? And if you look back to kind of what you just observed, his presence on the floor, it turns out to be a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I think it's a really big deal. And right now, Emery's still finding his way. He's not playing a ton of minutes so far, right? I mean, if you look at his minutes per game, at this point, it's only 19. I think by the end of the year, it's going to be 30, right? He's going to be near where Childs and Haas are. But the other thing I noticed, and this advanced statistics back this up, TJ Haas has taken a leap, man. He is his freshman year and sophomore year were almost like identical in stats. There were a few ups and downs, but he was basically the same player as far as value is concerned. He's now been very valuable. And the problem hasn't been Haas and Childs, right? We talked about this last week or the week before. It's everybody else. Like, Haas has been exactly what we hoped he would be, a better player. He's turning the ball over at a reasonable rate, but he's putting the ball in the basket, and he makes some amazing passes sometimes. it's everybody else, man. We just aren't getting, and that's what we need for memory, we just aren't getting anything from anybody else. Hartnett included. I mean, he's okay, right? But if Hartnett's your third best player, you're in trouble. And that's what where we're at. He's our third best player right now, and he needs to be your fourth, fifth, or sixth best guy, not your third.
So what is the kind of what's the ideal stat line you see from Emery? Because and you correct me if I'm wrong here, but it sounds like what we're saying is we need Emery to get into the rotation, right? We're working him in slowly, but I think we don't get where we want this team to be until Emery's, you know, we're getting the full complement of Emery, right? Where he's playing something more like 30 minutes a game.
Yeah, yeah.
But what's his contribution in terms of points and some of these other categories that you feel like helps you strike the balance that we're going to need?
So I think he needs to put up a stat line similar to his freshman season. So maybe not as high in points because Childs and Hawes are shouldering a huge portion of that load. But if you look at his freshman year, he averaged 16 points, three boards, 3.5 boards, 2.5 assists, and 1.5 steals. I need him. The Cougars need him to deliver something similar to that, right? And if you look at his per 40 minutes stats, we're four games in, right? He's not even close to that, right, today. He's behind on everything but assists. He's looked pretty good in steals. He's looked pretty good. But he's not taking a ton of shots right now per 40 minutes. He's definitely deferring. But I think at this point we need a bunch of the shots that Celius, Hartnett, and a few other players are taking to get into his hands. And the other part is our free throw shooting is going to get way better if he's shooting more free throws, right? And we've Baxter and Bergstrom and some of these other guys are shooting less, right? If he can just do what he did freshman year, I actually think – I don't know. It's hard to say we'll make the tournament at this point because the resume looks like crap, right?
The resume is not good.
The resume is not great right now. We don't have a signature win, right? And we talked about that Mississippi State game, which is coming up in a little bit, could be that out-of-conference signature win. Now, you could still, with Gonzaga and St. Mary's on the schedule four times, you could still play your way into the NCAA tournament. But today I'm not going to take that bet, right?
You can't take that bet today.
No, not based on the results so far. No, you can't. Gary Payne on Twitter, @FastBreakGP, has this to ask. When I watch the basketball team, they look better. Results are the same, though. Am I just getting old and missing stuff? Or are we just a regular mid-major NIT-bound team? What's the missing ingredient? Is there one? Matt, I think we're just a regular mid-major NIT-bound team today. That can change. Teams can grow. I think the major missing ingredient is depth. We thought we'd be deeper this year, and right now we're a two-man team. And hopefully Emery can be that third guy. But you need to make the tournament. Teams that make the tournament, the best teams we've had, they all have three horses, right? They all do. And sometimes more than that. And right
just,
now
just
we have
like
two.
The apocalypse.
Just like
you
the
need
apocalypse.
Three horsemen.
You need three horsemen, yes. Yes. Absolutely.
I'm not even sure. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Dante's Inferno. Horseman of the Apocalypse. We're very literary.
But,
we're very symbolic on this show.
But what I'd say to Gary Payne is, Gary, you know, he asks the question, am I just getting old? Am I missing stuff? What's the problem here? Gary, this is what the evolutions of complacency looks like. Right? It's like, oh yeah, the team looks better, but they're really not. Right? Is this just who we are? We're just a regular mid-major, you know, NIT bound, make the tournament every few years team. I mean, that's who we are right now. And until something happens differently where we can get a level of play consistently above that, that's who we are. That's where the program is.
According to sportsreference.com, last year we were the 80th best team in the country. Guess where sportsreference.com has us this year?
I'm guessing it's not as good as that.
80th. It's the same. It's the same, Gary. We're the same team as last year. Right?
Wow.
We're a better team offensively, but we're significantly worse defensively than we were last year, right? Like, you know, Childs is putting on a show. We talked about that. And Hawes, I just talked about him. His numbers right now, and it's different than his brother, But his numbers, his PER, for example, and his win shares per 40 minutes on Sports Reference are very similar to one of the lesser seasons that his brother had, right? It's very similar to a Jackson Emery type of value. Obviously, very different players, right? Emery's, a lot of his value came in defense, and Haas's does not necessarily come in defense. But you look at that and you say, like, we said in the preseason, you and I both said, if Haas makes the leap, this is a tournament team. But we assumed that there would be two or three or four guys behind him that would similarly play a lot better than either they did or whoever they were replacing for some of the freshmen or newcomers. And that's been, that's the missing ingredient.
That's what didn't, that's what
we
didn't
have no
happen.
Depth. There's no depth. You look right. At Jashire Hartnett at 11 points, 2.5 rebounds, and 2.1 assists. He is averaging less assists than Yoeli Childs, and he's handling the ball a ton, right? You know, and Seljaas has been okay. And actually, I like his energy on defense and his length on the perimeter, especially when they play the zone. But gosh, there's a lot missing. We don't have enough rebounding. We don't have guys that can defend people on the perimeter one-on-one besides Hartnett. So there's a lot of things that are missing right now. And it's just, I do like watching this team. I think they're giving effort. Like, I don't watch this team on Saturday. I didn't watch this team and been like, a bunch of lazy bums. They're not trying hard or any of that. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they're trying hard, and I feel like this has got to be on the coaches, not the players, right? But to be fair, this team should have Elijah Bryant and Meek on it, right? Like,
oh, can you imagine though? For just a second, can you just close your eyes and think about that?
If those guys were still on the team, okay. If that's who we were, you had the post presence of Meek and Childs. You had, imagine the other three starting players are wings, and it's Emery, Haas, and Bryant. And maybe you bring one of those wing guys off the bench, right? But at the end of games, that would be your five. Your tournament team, easy. Easy. You're the second best team in the West Coast Conference, and you've got a chance of splitting with Gonzaga in the regular season, even as good as they are, right? And then you've got Hartnett as your sixth or seventh best player. Right, which is exactly where he would thrive. Right, energy off the bench, good perimeter defender. You know, drives to the hoop. Not a great shooter, but that's okay because you don't need him to be. Right, but in this team, we need him to do more than he probably can shoulder. Which is too bad because I like him a lot. And maybe Emery can move him back into a more comfortable spot. All right. Well, that's enough basketball talk. Look at us talking basketball and everything.
Basketball's painful right now. Well, so let's talk about football.
Let's talk about football, which is not painful. So Matt, let's talk about football, and we've got a bowl game coming up on Friday.
I'm pretty excited about it, actually. I'm going to check one of my children out of school early to watch this bowl game.
That's good parenting right there.
Yeah, I think that it is good parenting. I think it's the right thing to do.
Of course it's the right thing to do. Is there another decision?
I think any other decision there would be suspect.
Yeah, so let's talk about the Broncos of Western Michigan for a second. Okay, so weird season that they've had. They had this win streak in the middle of the year against mainly pretty poor teams. Their signature win, of course, is against Northern Illinois, maybe. Maybe it's Miami of Ohio. Depends on how you want to look at it. But I'll take that Northern Illinois at the end of the year is their signature win.
It's got to be the signature win.
But they had three losses before that to Toledo and Ohio, who are both decent teams. And then a terrible loss to Ball State, who is not a good team.
Yeah, bad team. Just bizarre.
Bad team. That they should have, you know, that's a game that you should have even on the road. Statistically speaking, they're barely a top 100 team. They have a good defense, a good offense, I should say, ranked 40th by Football Outsiders. But their defense is pretty bad at 106th. The player to watch on offense is the running back, whose name is Levante Bellamy, and he had almost 1,200 yards, 6 yards per carry, 24 receptions, so he's involved in the pass game. Had a huge game in that loss, that overtime loss to Ball State, 35 carries for 213 yards and a touchdown. He hasn't actually caught many passes in the last 3 or 4 games. Anyway, that's kind of where they're at, Matt. Is there anything that scares you about Western Michigan?
No, there's not. And we've talked about, like, you know, especially you think about offensively, I think that Bellamy's serviceable, and he can be a workhorse if you need him to be. But I don't see anything in here that shouts explosive player to me.
No, no.
And you know, but that's the same thing people probably say about our offense. So there's nothing offensively here that makes me nervous. But I have a difficult time wrapping my head around how I feel about them defensively, just because of the. There's a wide range. If you look at the games that they play, I feel like there's just a wide range. And so I don't have a real good feel for how good I think this defense really is.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. And I think one of the issues that we'll have is, you know, they had a quarterback change, right? And the freshman, the freshman Caleb Ellaby played the last few games and actually outplayed, though marginally, the incumbent John Wasink. I don't know how you say that. And you know, Ellaby looked okay and helped that last win, 900 yards, 4 touchdowns, 2 picks. But he's not an explosive guy either, right? Like you said, I don't know that there's anybody on this offense. They've got a couple of receivers, a freshman named Jaden Reed, a junior, Dwayne Eskridge, who look decent as well. But again, not somebody that you're super scared of, but they're an efficient offense. No. And like you said, Bellamy is an above average back who unfortunately for him, he's running up against a team that I think does pretty well against those type of running backs, right?
You know, and that there is, I think that Ellaby does bring something a little bit to the table in terms of carries, but you know, he has run for a couple of scores, but again, nothing there that's making me super nervous, but I don't think we can handle.
Right, right, and they are a good passing team. Statistically speaking, and they are terrible against the pass, which I think means that Zach Wilson may end up having a really big day. I think there will
be that only works in our favor, right?
Wide open passing lanes for him, and I think that's a big deal, right? I think that's a big deal. If you look at BYU, Matt, they've obviously got this time to prepare. Got to look at film or whatever else. You're obviously not going to take these guys lightly if you're smart, because they beat a team that you lost to, right? So you shouldn't look at this and go, they're not great. We can beat them. What do you think the key is for BYU in this game? And we'll start offensively.
I think that it comes down to kind of what you talked about. I think that a solid passing game is going to be really important. That's what's going to set up that's what will set up the run. And I know that sounds a little bit cliche, but if you look at where we've been successful, especially since Zach Wilson came in, it's when we've been able to distribute the ball a little bit in the air. So for me, that really is the key on offense.
Yeah, I think that's a big key. And we also don't know exactly who will be running the ball for us, right? So I think there's with questions and the health of the running backs, I think Wilson will get a decent, at least early. You know, obviously if he starts carving them up, then you can start handing off to whomever, right? And I don't mean any disrespect to Burt or whomever ends up being healthy on Friday and gets the bulk of the carries. I'm just saying I think there's you know, I, for example, I don't think they can guard Bushman, right? I think HIFO could have some success on the fly sweep, right? They're not an athletic team that way that could disrupt that like we've seen with in some of the games where the offense has really struggled.
And if we can't figure that out, right? If we can't get Bushman into a situation where we can get him the football, and we're forced into a place where we're going to need the running game to get the offense going, we're gonna be in really big trouble.
But here's the thing. Bushman, when we have focused on him, nobody has been able to contain him so far when he's actually been a focus of the offense. We were the only ones that apparently could control him by just not playing him very much or passing him the ball. I'm serious.
Touché, my friend. I'm serious, man.
Like, I to this day, he ended up leading the team in targets after basically not being a part of the offense in the first half of the year. That's kind of amazing when you think about it, right? He led the team in targets. He led the team in yards, led the team in yards per catch, all these things and all of this. And he was, I think, very much the best wide receiver slash pass catcher. I know he's a tight end, everybody, who we had this year, right? And I think, you know, I think that he will get involved. On the defensive side, what's the key, Matt?
You know, that's tough. I feel like their offense, you know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, they had a change of personnel at the quarterback spot. You know, not a lot of explosive players. So it's difficult for me to think about what exactly we're going to need to key in on defensively on these guys, because I'm just not sure I have a real good feel for what I think they're going to do. So when I get into a space like that, I feel like I fall into really cliche things, which is kind of what I went with on the offensive side of the football. But I think it's going to be I think we're going to have to do better statistically on average on third down than we've done the rest of the year. Like, we got to just get them off the field on third down. And if we can, and I had the number up here in front of me and I lost it, but I think that if we can beat our third down efficiency on defense, we should be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I think that's a great one. I think it really is forcing this freshman quarterback to make decisions, right? We've seen this all year. When we can put young quarterbacks in bad spots, we get turnovers or negative plays, right? When we let these young quarterbacks who are talented, and this guy, I think, is a talented guy. He's completed, you know, 65% of his passes, 8 yards per pass attempt. I mean, those are good numbers, you know, from a raw statistics standpoint. If we just let him have time, he's going to thrive. But he's also been sacked a bunch, and he will take sacks. And so we need to make sure that we're in there doing that. And I don't know if we'll have that capability. Is Kaufusi not playing? Do we know that for certain?
I believe we know that Kaufusi will not be playing.
I mean, I thought he wasn't playing in the last game, and he played. But yes, I think it will be challenging. The other piece is we've been very good at this year. We just can't give off any big plays against a team that's not a big play offense, right? Like, we can't, like, you can't give them a 40-yard run or a big long pass plays when they're not that kind of offense, right? You can't be complacent because they don't take a lot of shots. They're going to take some shots, though, and you gotta be ready for that.
Yeah, but, you know, and I think that you're right in terms of what we have to do against a freshman quarterback, right? And good teams in situations like this will be able to throw things and disguise things against a freshman quarterback that are going to confuse him. And that's what we need to do. The part about that that makes me nervous is that that's not something that we've consistently done. Like, and maybe I'm eyeing it too critically because I'm still got a Bronco Mendenhall lens on, but Mendenhall was very good at that, keeping offenses guessing about what he was doing defensively. And especially with young quarterbacks who had not spent a lot of time in film room or hadn't had the same number of reps in game type situations, you can really get into a guy's head that way and throw some curveballs at him where he's going to make a mistake in terms of what the coverage is or what type of blitz or things are coming his way. And I'm not as confident that we're going to be able to take really good advantage of that against this young quarterback. But I just don't know that it's going to make a difference.
Assuming Taki Taki is healthier than he was at the end of the year, because I know they didn't say it, But he looked slow to me the last couple of games. In the Utah game, he looked slow, which to me means he's probably hurt or banged up, right?
Right.
Assume for a second that he's fully healthy again and at full speed or close to it. I think you move him all over the field like they had been doing in the last few games with Kaufusi, right? And I think that's a way that you can do that without Tuiaki really changing the way he wants to coach defense, which is more straight up, right? Which bothers you to no end. And me too. But I think if you can do that, that may be sufficient, right? And obviously that big defensive line has to be disruptive at the point of attack, right? To open up opportunities for Isaiah Kaufusi, for Taki Taki, and potentially, just clogging up run lanes. So,
yeah, but I mean, the thing is, and we got to keep this in mind, is that this is a freshman quarterback who did come out and throw for 285 yards against that NIU defense that we struggled with. I think that, and it's statistically a better defense than any of us expected or really gave them credit for. Well, not anybody, but definitely me going into that game. So I think that to think that we're just going to be able to shut these guys down offensively, I think is folly.
Yeah.
They're going to score some points, but the trick is going to be we just got to score more. Our freshman quarterback has got to be better than theirs.
Yep, I think so. All right. Well, Matt, BYU is favored by 12.5 points on the spread. Are you taking the points on that one? Are you taking BYU or the points? Or I'm saying that wrong. I always say it
yeah.
wrong.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't believe that BYU covers that spread.
I believe BYU covers that spread.
That's a huge spread.
That is a big spread.
That's 12 points. Is it 12 or 12.5?
12.5 is the one I'm looking at right now.
I've seen both. That's insane. A 12.5 point spread is a big spread.
That is a big spread. That is a big spread. The over under is 49.5. I am taking the under.
Over.
Under. You're taking the over. Okay.
Oh wait, this is like old school whack days.
Yeah, old school whack days. I don't think so. They don't score that much on our defense. I think they're going to struggle. So Matt, I'll give my prediction. BYU 28, Western Michigan 14.
Interesting. I'm going also with a BYU win. BYU 35, Western Michigan 30.
You think it's going to be a little closer?
I think it's going to be a little bit of a
down
barn burner.
Wire?
I think it's going to be a fun game. I think it's going to be a fun game to watch, but I do think BYU wins this game.
Yeah. So I think BYU is in control this entire game, but Western Michigan just hangs around. You know what I mean? Like, you're never going to feel totally comfortable, right? Especially after that Utah game. I don't know if I'll ever feel comfortable again, to be honest.
I can't even get comfortable in non-football situations after that.
No lead is going to feel comfortable.
I'm sitting in a meeting at work. They're like, you seem uncomfortable. I'm like, did you see the BYU-Utah game?
Did you see the end of that game?
Did you see that game? I'm never going to be comfortable again.
I'll never feel comfortable again.
The Matt you knew is no more.
Yeah, he's gone now. So Randy Whittle asked this on Facebook. How can I watch more than one game on the Smurf turf in one season without suffering permanent retinal damage? # Smurf turf blindness. Matt, do you have any advice for Randy Whittle?
Yeah, you can't. The quick answer for you is that you can't.
You know what
Your
we need?
Eyes will be permanently damaged.
We need to invent this. The Smurf turf goggles that somehow they turn the field. You can put them on while you're watching it on TV or in person. And put them on, and they turn the field green, but keep everything else the same. Is there any
way? Is that
way?
like those sunglasses for people that are colorblind, like something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, or the blue blockers.
By the way, that's an amazing invention, right? That's an amazing invention.
Super cool, right?
Amazing.
Whoever did that, get to work on this Smurf turf.
Yeah, they got to be able to do this Smurf turf thing.
I'm sure they listened to this podcast, whoever that was. So I'm sure they'll listen.
Yeah, because blue turf is cool.
Oh my gosh, it's so
said
dumb.
Said no one ever.
It's so dumb. It's so dumb. I know we say this every year. I get it, and people are probably sick of it, but it's dumb. Just
act like you've been here before, guys. Just put normal turf down.
Just put green turf down like everybody else.
Except for Eastern Washington.
Oh, what's theirs?
Red.
Oh yeah, that's even worse. The Reds.
Yeah, but
worse.
Guess what? But they're not a. They're an FCS team.
By the way, FCS. I enjoyed watching the FCS playoffs.
Oh, the FCS playoffs have been amazing, and I'm convinced more now than ever that we need that at the Division I level.
Of course we do.
I know we don't call it Division I, whatever. The FBS level.
Of course we do. It's so. Any argument? Okay, the women's volleyball Final Four just took place here in Minneapolis last week, right? So what's one of the big arguments against a playoff that is so bogus is
the finals
and the academics, when all of these other sports who have way less support than an FBS football team, right? Way less, you know, like support from the school, you know, financial support in general. So women's volleyball, they can play deep into December, but heaven forbid, or FCS football can do it, but heaven forbid, you know, those struggling students in FBS football, they couldn't do it.
It was crazy. I think it was Jim Mora. Is he an announcer now on like Fox or something?
I don't know, is he?
He was the UCLA coach. And anyway, I think this is who I saw. So they started having a conversation about, you know, who's got it right, right? Does FCS have it right or does FBS have it right? And he went into this whole thing about how he loved the FCS playoff and all these teams have a shot and they make it work and it doesn't mess up with the, you know, with the academics and all this. Like, he does this whole thing. And they said, well, what do you think about the 14 playoff? Do they need to expand? And you would assume that that's where he was going. He's like, well, I don't know. You can't expand the 14 playoff because you can't have these guys playing games late into January. And I'm like, hey, numbskull, like, you would just start the games now. Like, you wouldn't wait a month to start the tournament, moron. And then
you'd have the first week of it the week after the conference championships, like, game.
You can't say that FCS has it right and that their playoff system is awesome and then say that it won't work at the FBS level for a whole list of reasons that also apply to those student athletes. It makes no sense. And at the same time, you know, if you were paying attention during the BYU-Stanford volleyball game, you had players at Stanford, because their semester ends earlier than everybody else, they were taking finals. A couple of them took finals that morning. They just took them on the road. I understand that's hard. I do. I get it. But we're doing it to student athletes in every other sport at every other level.
Oh, yeah. It's so disingenuous. Like, it just either shows complete and total, like, duplicity.
You don't give them a bye week when they have midterms.
Oh, right. Or it shows that they don't understand what these other athletes are going through. Right? Because I had friends at BYU, and then I had somebody at Purdue when I worked there that she was playing on the basketball team while she was doing her first year of her MBA. And you remember how hard that first semester was of MBA program. And she was not, she hadn't done a lot of math classes before. And she'd come in and like asking for advice on these things. And I'm sitting here going, and like, who's worried about her? Her season starts, basketball starts before and goes over finals, right? Like, basketball season is like the beginning of your season and heading into your conference season is finals, right? And you don't even get a semester break because you're off playing.
It's crazy.
So anyway, so Matt, next season or in the future or whatever, we had talked about over the last 2 weeks, got asked this question a couple weeks ago about what player from the past would we want to be on next year's team. You and I both said Harvey Unga on offense and Kyle Van Noy on defense. And last week, go ahead.
I think we were supposed to pick one player, I'm still sticking with my Kyle Van Noy, but go ahead.
I'm still sticking with Harvey Unga. So that's what I said. You picked Kyle Van Noy, and I picked Harvey Unga.
There you go. All right.
But last week, people questioned whether you'd pick Jamal Williams or Harvey Unga, and I said you should pick Harvey Unga. I stuck with Unga. You agreed,
I
right?
flip-flopped. I waffled.
You waffled a little bit. Well, Jeff Johnston on Twitter responded this way. That's at JeffJBYU. Nice work as usual on last week's podcast. Thanks, Jeff. By the way, Harvey Unga is the correct running back to choose. Bigger, stronger, better hands, comparable speed to Jamal. Harvey broke the BYU all-time record in just 3 seasons. I, Jeff, I won't disagree with you on any of those points. I think Harvey Unga was the better running back. But we're talking about two of the best ever at BYU. So, you know what I mean? We're not, I'm not saying that the gap is really that big between the two of them, but I would pick Unga. Matt, are you going to waffle some more?
I don't know. Like I waffled a little bit last week and I'm still going to continue to waffle. I think Jamal Williams, at least according to the eye test, seems faster to me. That might just be because there's definitely a size difference. I will give you that. And that might be what gets me. And Harvey Unga was a physical runner, would run over people, you know, famous run into the end zone against Utah where he literally ran over a guy and like looked down on him on his way into the end zone.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But let's not forget Jamal Williams. Now he handled contact either. I mean, Jamal Williams did not shy away from the hit.
Oh, he drove people, yards after contact. People.
Oh, he buried people, carried people. I mean, Jamal Williams is not messing around either, and he's a little bit smaller than Harvey, but definitely packs a very similar punch. So you're splitting hairs when you're trying to talk about these two guys. I mean, two of the best ever to come through the program. A definite recency bias for me with Jamal. But I think you're really splitting hairs. But what I don't have in front of me is who clocked a faster 40 at their pro day, because Harvey's was a little bit weird because he was the supplemental draft and all this. But
I don't know. I mean,
I don't know who was actually faster, but the gap is not very wide.
I think, like you said, Williams is probably faster. Unga is probably stronger, but they were both like Unga was fast. And Williams was a physical runner, right? So it's not like we're talking about two guys whose skill sets were that disparate, right? I think Unga was just a better receiver, which probably tips it for me towards him. But I don't know. You couldn't go wrong. Right?
But the other thing, and we talked about this before, is Unga was on a team. He was surrounded by NFL talent all over the place on that offense.
Yeah,
he had a better offensive line.
He did have a better offensive
and so,
line.
Yeah, he did. He broke the rushing record in 3 years. So, yeah, he did. He absolutely did. But if you put Jamal on that team, do I think Jamal puts up similar stats with that offensive line and that passing attack to free up space for him?
Well, and if you look at Jamal's best year and Unga's best year as far as total yards go, Jamal had a better year, and he averaged, he had 2 years better than Unga on that respect. I don't know.
It's a great conversation, because it's fun to talk about two of the greatest that we've ever had.
Yeah, yeah. Sean Ritchie has a different answer, Matt. He says, I agree that Harvey Unga is a great choice. I think I would still have to go with Austin Collie. Pair him with Wilson in this passing attack gets way more traction and opens up running lane. It's not a bad argument, right?
It's not a terrible argument, but if we're talking about putting somebody on the current roster right now, or we're talking about putting somebody onto the 2019 team, and I look at the needs in either of those situations, and I just think about the offense, I think you have to go with the running back. I think we've got some receivers next year for Zach to throw to. Now, do we have an Austin Collie on the roster? No. But we do. We definitely don't have, right now, we don't have somebody who's head and shoulders above in the backfield.
Yeah, see, this is where
a throwing game, you got Romney, right, coming back. You got Bushman still. I mean, you've got some options.
This is where you and I will disagree for the second week in a row. I think
you're
going to
say the same thing you said last time.
I think Katoa is much closer to those guys than any of the wide receivers. Forget push Bushman out for a second, okay? Way better than any of the wide receivers. Maybe Romney could get there, right? He's a very talented guy, and he might get somewhere, maybe not Austin Collie, but close, right? Collie, I agree with Sean. I don't know if I would make that choice or not. But he did make me think about, as I read that comment on Twitter, was, well, gosh, think about for a second stretching the field with Collie. Think about this. We haven't had a guy like Collie basically since Collie, right? A real burner who was also happened to be one of the best route runners, right, around. And, I mean, he just faked guys out of their shorts, right, and then ran past them. Or sometimes just ran past them. laid out, made these great catches. So I totally get what you're saying. I just think you may just transform the offense and say, well, gosh, we could just do with the running backs we've got. Yeah, they're not the deepest group, and you know, we can argue about whether Katoa, how close he could get to some of these other really really good, historically good BYU running backs. But gosh, Colley on with Wilson throwing to him, and then Bushman underneath, right? You know, you could see crossing routes and different things with those two. That what do you do if you're the safety? Where do you move, right?
Yeah, what do you choose? You're gonna pick your poison.
Yeah, right? You're gonna cheat to the Colley side because he might burn that corner, or are you gonna cheat to the Bushman side because the linebacker or safety that's on him can't guard him, right? Like, I don't know. It's fun. Those are fun arguments, right? Because you can't really win. Well, I win every time, actually.
Yeah, but I have a feeling we're gonna be arguing this question for weeks. But at the end of the day, if I have to only take a single player,
you're taking Kyle.
I'm still taking Kyle Benoit.
Yeah, I know you're. All right, Matt. Well, we have to do our extravaganza bowl game thing.
Extravaganza.
Finish all the bowl games. So let's fire it up, man. We finished last week. The games before Christmas. We're going to do all the games after Christmas. All right? So,
oh boy.
The day after Christmas, the first bowl game that morning is the Serve Pro First Responder Bowl, 7-5 Boston College, 10-3 Boise State. Boise State is favored by just 2.5 points. Matt, who you got?
I'm taking the Screaming Eagles.
I am taking Boise State. And percent chance you see some of this game. 100% chance. That's right. Later that afternoon, there's the Quick Lane Bowl in Detroit, Michigan. It's 6-6 Minnesota, 7-5 Georgia Tech. The Ramblin' Wreck, isn't that what they're called?
They're the Yellow Jackets, but that's fine.
Who's the Ramblin' Wreck?
But I think that's like their nickname they use in their fight song or something.
Yeah. They're the Ramblin' Wreck.
You're right. I'll back off. Right.
They're favored by 5.5 points, whoever they are. Matt, I've got the Gophers. Who you got?
I'm also taking the Golden Gophers. Row the boat.
Ski
Oorah or whatever it is. What is it? Our nephew David texted it to me. What is it?
I don't know. I've only lived here 7 years.
I don't know what it is. I can't remember. Row the boat.
About 70% chance I see this game.
Yeah, I'm probably in that same space, right? Because I'm in the middle of the day. Like I'm at. That's a little. Oh, I guess
we might go see it. I'm gonna have to. I don't know.
I can't watch three games that day.
No, I won't. The night game that night is the Cheez-It Bowl in Phoenix, Arizona, at Chase Field. 7-5 California, 6-6 TCU. Seems like a better game than it actually will be. You know, when you hear Cal, TCU bowl game.
Yeah.
But they're not. Neither of them are very good. Cal is favored by a point. I am taking the Horned Frogs.
I'm taking the Bears.
Taking the Bears. 100% chance.
And the Golden Bears.
100% chance I see at least some of this game.
100%. Agreed.
On Thursday, the 27th, the first game is the Walk-Ons Independence Bowl in Shreveport, Louisiana. 8-4 Temple, 7-5 Duke. Temple's favored by 4. I'm going to go with Temple.
I'm taking Duke in the Walk-Ons Independence Bowl. And for anybody who's ever has a chance to go to a Walk-Ons, can I just recommend the Buffalo Chicken Sandwich?
Okay. Good.
It's delicious.
Thank you for the recommendation. Waffle fries. Decent chance I see at least some
giant chicken breasts on that thing. It is really good. All right. Sorry. Go ahead. I digress.
Decent chance I see some of that game.
Yeah, it's high. I'd say 65%.
Yeah, 65. That afternoon is the New Era Pinstripe Bowl, and why they have a bowl game in Yankee Stadium, I still don't understand it. 7-5
because
Miami.
Why not?
7-5 Wisconsin. Miami's favored by 3.5, and I'm taking the Badgers.
I'm taking Miami, baby. I'm always a Big Ten homer in this thing, but I'm taking the Canes. The U is back.
Oh, stop it with the U.
They're not back.
They're not the U. Everybody's the U.
They said it first.
No, they didn't.
If I only put two schools on the timeline and one of them is Miami and one's the University of Utah, I'm going to give credit to Miami.
You know what they call Minnesota here in Minnesota?
Boom.
The U.
Yeah, that's great. You know,
everybody does. Like, you're not the U. That's everybody. University's in every name. It's in every name except for the Air Force Academy. Like, Boston College. Like, Everybody's the you.
It's West so Point. Dumb.
So dumb. Get.
Do you want me to keep going? Or you, all right.
There's like four of them. Thank you for listing them. All right.
Pretty fired up about this.
100% chance I see some of that game. That night is the Academy Sports Outdoors Texas Bowl in Houston. Your neck of the woods. 6-6 Baylor against 6-6 Vanderbilt. Who cares? Vandy favored by 5. None of us win. I'll take Vanderbilt.
Yeah, nobody wins in this scenario, but I'm also going to take Vanderbilt. Roll the boat.
I'm not seeing any of that game.
Roll the boat, Commodores.
Friday, December 28th, it's the Franklin America Mortgage Music City Bowl in Nashville, Tennessee. 6-6 Purdue, 7-5 Auburn. Auburn's favored by 4. I'm taking the Boilermakers. I'm a homer.
Yeah, you got to take the Boilermakers, baby.
Hey, this is a team that beat Ohio State this year, and they've also lost to some terrible teams, so who knows? Who knows what Purdue team's got? 100% chance I see all of this game.
100% chance I watch Purdue beat Auburn in this game.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That afternoon, the Camping World Bowl out of Orlando, Florida, 8-3 West Virginia. Now we're getting to ranked teams. Number 16, West Virginia. Number 20, Syracuse. West Virginia is favored by 1.5. I'm taking the Orange Men in this one.
Go Orange.
Good chance I see at least some of that game.
Yeah, I'll watch some of that game. The
nightcap is the Valero Alamo Bowl in San Antonio, Texas. Number 24, Ohio State. Number 13, Washington State. Washington State's favored by 3.5, and I'm taking the Cougars.
I'm also taking Washington State because there's no basement in the Alamo.
That's right, and 100% chance I see at least some of that game. On Saturday, the 29th, it is number 10, Florida, number 7, Michigan. Michigan's favored by 7.5. I think I'm going to take Florida in this one.
Oh, stop it. Go Big Blue. This won't even be close.
I want the upset. I want the upset. That's, by the way, that's the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl in Atlanta, Georgia.
Chick-fil-A and peaches. Both things are delicious.
Delicious. Have you ever tried peaches on a Chick-fil-A sandwich?
That sounds terrible, but a peach milkshake at Chick-fil-A. Oh, thumbs up.
Fantastic. I will likely see some of that game.
You know what? My goal right now, I'm going to go ahead and set a goal. My goal is to see some of that game while eating Chick-fil-A. How's that?
Yeah, and this is a big day of football, right? This is like what January 1st should be, but they're not doing it because they're idiots. So let's keep going. The other 11 a.m. game is the Belk Bowl in Charlotte, North Carolina. 7-5 South Carolina, 7-5 Virginia. South Carolina is favored by 5.5. I'm taking South Carolina in this one.
I'm taking the Fighting Bronco Mendenhalls at University of Virginia.
All right. And 100% chance I see some of that game.
100%, baby. 12, and I'll probably still be eating Chick-fil-A.
12:15 Central Time. It's the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl in Tucson. 8-4 Arkansas State. 7-5 Nevada. Who cares? Arkansas State's favored by 1.5. I guess I'll take them, whatever they are.
Arkansas State it is.
All right. Then the big games, Matt. The big games. First semifinal game, which will be number 3 Notre Dame, number 2 Clemson. Both undefeated. That means they haven't lost. In the Cotton Bowl Classic in Arlington, Texas. Matt, I'm taking Clemson, and I think that game is going to be super close and a great game.
I'm taking the Irish.
You're taking the – of course you have. You have to. You've become an Irish fan.
I've not become an Irish fan, yes, but I just want to take a second. Can I just take a second? Who was my 4 at the beginning of the season? Do you have that in front of you?
I do. Do you want to see
it? Did we write this down?
I did.
Who was my 4 at the beginning of the season?
Your 4 at the beginning of the season were Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, and Notre Dame.
Oh, man.
That was your 4.
I was pretty close, right? This Notre Dame team is pretty good.
You had Notre Dame in your 4 the entire year, every time we talked about it.
Yes, I did.
That's impressive.
This Notre Dame team is pretty good. I think Clemson is also very good. I think that on any given day, either of these two teams could win. And honestly, I think on any given day, either of these two teams have a chance against a team like Alabama. But on this particular day, I'm taking the Irish.
All right. And then the night, of course, is the Capital One Orange Bowl, the other semifinal in Miami. Number 4, Oklahoma. Number 1, Alabama. I think Alabama destroys them.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I think that Oklahoma will hang with them for a while, and then their defense has shown this year, Oklahoma's defense, they'll give up a lot of points to a good offense. Alabama has a good offense, regardless of which one.
Does it matter which quarterback we get? I'm not sure that it matters.
The difference really is Alabama's defense. That's where I think the difference is in this game. And so who's your national champion?
See, I think Kyler Murray gives them fits in the first half.
Oh, I agree.
They come back out and figure it out.
I think Kyler Murray ends up having a really good day. I just don't think their defense can get enough stops where it will matter.
Kyler Murray is going to go on and have a great career in Major League Baseball.
That's right. Good for him. Inexplicably, there's a bunch of other bowls after the semifinals. We're not even going to talk about all of them. I'm going to skip some of these because this is stupid.
You don't want to talk about the TaxSlayer Gator Bowl?
No, this is stupid. I've said this every year, and I'm going to say it every year. This is stupid that there's a bunch of stupid bowl games after the semifinals. It's insane. Makes no sense to me whatsoever. By the way, the semifinals should be played on the 1st of January.
We can't do that.
Yeah, they can. And more people would watch because there's nothing else to do.
Something about tradition and the Rose Bowl.
Rose Bowl's dumb. They should just stop playing it. So on New Year's Eve, there's a bunch of bowl games. Do I care about any of these games? Blah, blah, blah. Utah's in a game. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Let's come back and do the rest of these games next week. How about that?
That's fair.
We'll stop here.
That's fair.
We'll stop here with the semifinals. I'm obviously in a bad mood. Not really, actually.
I don't know why you're in such a bad mood. There's a couple of, the Rose Bowl, it's being played at a weird time, playoffs, blah, 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 but we can't get the playoff thing right. But that's a good game. That'll be a good game.
Oh, no. The game itself, Washington and Ohio State, is great, right? But what I want them to do is I want to switch the 2 days. I want them to play a bunch of these games on the 29th and play the semifinals on the 1st. Because the years we've had that is like the greatest football day ever, right? You have some bowl games in the morning, and then you have the 2 semifinal games to end it. And the thing is, nobody has anything else to do on January 1st, right? Like the Saturday of the 29th, people will watch those games. It's better than the idiocy of having it on New Year's Eve, which is just insane to me. If they ever do that again, they deserve what's coming to them, which is poor ratings, right? Because it's New Year's Eve. Everybody, I can't say to my wife, we're going to watch football on New Year's Eve. Yeah, good luck, right?
Yeah, we're not going out.
We're not having friends over. We're not doing any of that because we're going to sit here and watch football. Oh, and by the way, I want to watch football all day tomorrow too. Yeah.
And all day that day.
Yeah, all day this day, all day tomorrow. I'll see you on January the 2nd.
Yeah. See you next year.
Yeah, see you next year. So anyway, well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. We are actually going to be back. We're going to have a weird schedule next week. We'll probably record on Wednesday or Thursday of next week. We will, of course, recap the bowl game. But join us at halftime for our halftime show during the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. Matt, we're going to run it from your computer.
Will I be on the halftime show? Will I be on? I don't know. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. That's a surprise, everybody.
You will be on the halftime show. I won't be on it.
Hey.
We're going to run it from your computer. We're going to try it this way this time, which we were supposed to last time. And I got all antsy and I jumped on. And I'm sorry.
I wasn't going to say anything, but basically what happened.
Sorry, not sorry. Anyway, so join us at facebook.com/riseandshout at halftime for our halftime show. Hopefully us talking about a lead that we won't cough up in the second half. But thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes or most anywhere else that you might want to subscribe to a podcast. Still not Spotify. I'm working on that. And, of course, if you want to email the show, you can do that at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. We did have an email. We've run out of time, so we will get back to that next week about Dante's Inferno. We'll get back to that. Ryan Crockett.
It's really got some legs to it, Inferno.
Oh, it's totally. We're totally doing a whole episode on it. So, anyway, thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.